down the gauntlet!
Hello, and welcome to the Saladcast on Sunday, April the 12th, 2026. I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today, Zachary Burgess.
Functional.
And Robert Kemp.
Operational.
No illness problems this week.
Nope, all good. Apart from that horrible sniff that I just did.
Well, this is me getting, getting the cat of your house again.
Yeah,
true. I haven't had it this happen this quickly for a while, actually. I normally manage to keep it quite under control.
Cat hasn't been in the house much the last few days, so that's somewhat surprising. And I hoovered you.
No, you did hoover.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that made it worse.
Well, that was yesterday. Yeah.
All the dust that doesn't go into the hoover just gets chucked in the air instead.
What is, like, dust settling time? Like, so if I hoovered yesterday, it's like, would 24 hours be enough for it to calm?
You'd think that would be enough, right? Yeah. 24 hours? I don't know.
Depends.
I mean, I did, like, dust this room a few days ago, and, like, within, like, a day, like, there was another layer of crust. So I assumed, like, I had dusted it, and all it had done is lift it, and then it was just like,
probably.
Let's just resettle. Like,
God damn it.
Although somehow my room has seemed to have got the opposite nowadays, where it's just, like, it doesn't seem to get dusty practically at all somehow. I think it's because I just have the dehumidifier on most of the time, at least through the winter. Because it's circulating the air, all the dust gets stuck on the filter on the back of the dehumidifier.
Oh, right.
So it, like, scoops it out of the air, basically.
And maybe on the filter on your fans in your PC as well.
Well, yeah, but that has all other grills protecting those.
Yeah, I did have a little look at that the other day as well. But my PC is surprisingly clean, actually.
Well, yeah, because, like, most of the time they have grills over the way over the vents now on modern PC cases. It's not like it's just exposed fans any longer.
I mean, I did notice in my troubles with Windows, which maybe I'll talk about in a second, that, you know, I was peering into the case and I did spot a couple of spider webs. So there's that. It's like, oh, son of a bitch.
Cobwebs inside your PC.
Yeah,
man.
Just like,
I guess it's warm in there.
Just strung between the CPU cooler and the RAM.
Oh my gosh. No, that's dusty.
That's not dusty. It's spidery.
I don't get many cobwebs in my... It's hard to tell how many spiders are living in my flat. Zero, but there could well be several.
Are spiders, like, less frequent in, like, apartments several stories up? Like,
yeah,
we talked about this
before, didn't we?
Maybe.
I mean,
we talked
surely
about bugs
they are.
In Dan's apartment.
Yeah, well, the flying bugs, obviously, they have a height ceiling, limit, yes. I think. But I think I'm below the ceiling.
But if there aren't any flying bugs, surely there would be any spiders, because that's one leads to the other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But then it takes effort for the spiders to actually climb the thing. Is it worth it? Do they know?
I don't know.
I guess they go up trees.
They get in places. I don't know if they cling onto bags and clothing or something to get in. Yeah.
They're in your hair right now. And you don't know it.
I'm sure they are.
Planting eggs in your ears.
Ear eggs.
Spiders. There was, like, someone tried to... I'm not sure this was true, but someone tried to convince me that, like, there's a stat about, like, if you sleep on your back, like, how many spiders just sort of fall into your mouth.
I mean, that's
yeah,
a classic
that's,
ancient...
Yeah, that's famous
myth.
And also not true.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought.
That's a pre-internet myth.
Yeah, it's a classic kind of Snopes.com kind of myth, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, if that was true, the spider that's been hanging out in the corner of my bedroom, like, the same one, like, he definitely would have fallen in by now.
Well, it wouldn't just fall in for no reason. No. It's like, if it's
well, he would lower,
out in
he would lower
corner
himself,
of your room.
He would lower himself casually and then upset me, and I'd be like, and eat it accidentally. That's how I imagine it happening.
Well, it wasn't an accident, then, was it?
No, it's the end for me. I'm going to spelunk this guy, and that'll be an honourable death.
I found the Snopes.com entry published April 22nd, 2001. Wow.
Wow.
And that's
the average person swallows 8 spiders per year. Rating false. Yeah, that's way after it got asked, yeah, but...
I mean, I wonder if you're a runner, like, then maybe I probably do, like, ingest several bugs of different kinds.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, accidentally.
Just letting them moving forward. Yeah.
And probably that's why the thing could have been true at some point in the past, just not in like modern times. It's probably an ancient, like, you know, a thing that parents say to their children that has just persisted since like medieval times or some shit.
Well, you reckon they were just like so pissed off with their kids snoring or something, and it's like, sleep with your mouth closed, you'll eat spiders.
Yeah, probably.
My mum told me she was genuinely frightened when she was a child by the, if you swallow the pips in an apple, it'll grow a whole tree inside you and you'll die.
I've never heard that one.
That's a really cruel one to tell a child.
Yeah.
Why would you tell anyone that? That's just...
I think I don't know if I'd ever heard that for apples. I think I'd heard that from like cress, which is like really dumb because cress is like, cress basically is a seed. Yeah, like you're basically eating the seeds anyway. It's barely a plant.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost every sandwich you see at like a local buffet. You know, if someone's doing like a homemade buffet, I should say, with egg and cress for some reason. Standard UK affair. Do they have cress in America?
Yeah, good question. The plant must exist. Well, they don't grow it, though, do they? Cultivate it. Yeah.
Is the egg and cress sandwich a thing?
Probably not that.
Yeah.
No, probably not.
What are, do you reckon, like the American like standard triangle sandwiches?
BLT.
Like, I don't think they do the triangle sandwiches. Like, no? They definitely don't have them in shops like we do, you know, like M&S sandwiches. That concept doesn't really exist.
Well, it's all like packaged subs or something, or does that not exist?
No, I think they think that's weird, which is probably sensible, right? In a good world, you get your subs made up for you in a deli, right? Or in a bodega,
I guess. But like, do they not have something at like gas stations that aren't like the hot dogs?
I mean, it doesn't work in America because, as usual, everything's too far apart, too much transport time. So you can't have a fresh sandwich that, like, you can't make a fresh sandwich somewhere and then transport it somewhere in America because that doesn't work.
Yeah,
you can do that in England where it's like it's literally packaged just down the street, pretty much.
Yeah, I guess like in a world where like almost everything in America feels like it's pre-packaged and like individually wrapped.
And it's got to be super sterilized or whatever to make it even last long enough to get to the store.
And masquerading as cheese.
Yes.
Like cheese food. Yeah. I just assumed that would be a thing. But anyway, but surely would they serve sandwiches at if it was just above, ignoring the
logistics.
Yeah, the source of said sandwich. Like, what would they serve? Like, any kind of sandwich, even a triangle or not? Like, at a buffet or a social gathering? Like, is that a thing? Like, even if they're not triangular? Heretics and go rectangular?
I don't think I've ever... I can't picture a pop culture reference in my mind of that happening in America.
All I think of when I think of American sandwiches are like huge, like Jewish brisket sandwiches at Katz's Deli, New York or whatever.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like,
Where it's not actually. I
picture them being made fresh, obviously, even in a bodega or whatever. I think I seem to be scoped to New York City, where America's a massive place.
I mean, Deli Central, right? I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
And then apart from that, it's just hot dogs, which obviously carrot sandwiches.
I mean, those are easy, right? I can definitely see that. Like some kind of crappy bread that doesn't go off somehow because it's just filled with chemicals and combined with wieners that
Every time I see people talking about American bread, it's always in the context of the classic, you know, also only partially true thing of like, American bread is basically like cake because it's got so much sugar in. And then it's like, so what do you put in a sandwich? I mean, that's peanut butter and jelly, I guess. Sure, that's the answer. Because you've already got the sweet part of the jam in there, so it doesn't matter if the bread's sweet as well.
In my limited experience in America, like, I don't remember the bread being overly sweet. Like, maybe in burgers, right?
It depends what you ate, where from.
Yeah, I mean, I was out, sort of West Coast way. It didn't strike me as overly sweet. Japan, on the other hand, that is very much a thing. Like bread is sweet there, pretty generally.
But that's because they didn't have bread.
Yeah, bread's not really
bread. Isn't indigenous.
And it's not a hugely Japanese staple, right? They don't eat anywhere near as much of it. So it's sort of more of a sides on the desserty category, I guess, for them. The exceptions were like some of the hotels, right? Because the hotels were, at least two of the hotels were pretty fancy that we stayed in, and they, I guess, were Western catering on their toast for breakfast. But yes, otherwise, Japanese bread, I think it's safe to say pretty sweet on the whole.
I saw that M&S had started doing the Japanese style strawberry and cream sandwiches or something.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah. Wasn't that actually like a Wimbledon time thing?
Maybe it was.
You're gonna
put
strawberries and cream in anything, it's gonna be related to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
But really, that's literally just a normal sponge cake, isn't it? Just a real cheap way of making a sponge cake, and just like instead of making the cake white, you just use bread instead.
Yeah. or a scone, right? It's like it's a cream tea without any of the nice bits. Not that cream and strawberries aren't the nice bits, you know, but yeah. But give me a scone.
Oh man, I've looked up a list of American sandwiches and it all looks so delicious. Like, I'll take this over egg and cress any day.
Egg and cress is meant to be hungry. Awesome.
That's true. It's meant to be lame, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got no beef with the egg and cress sandwich, but nobody chooses an egg and cress sandwich. No. You have it just because the triangle is there, right? Like,
and then the classic cucumber sandwich with all the crust cut off or whatever.
Yeah, and nothing
like, that's okay with tea and stuff, like not as an actual meal thing.
Weirdly, that's referenced in Sonic Unleashed, like the cucumber sandwich. Like,
well, because they have English Land or whatever it's called.
Well, he's right. It's like one of the professors who's in Spagonia.
But
right?
He's in English though. That professor.
I guess I don't really remember.
Isn't Spagonia the weird Italy?
Yeah, it's the weird Italy. Like, and then there's this guy who eats nothing but cucumber sandwiches.
I'm pretty sure that guy's meant to be an English professor. Classic cliche.
Yeah, right. Probably.
It'll make more sense. Can't see Italians eating cucumber sandwiches.
I should probably check out that recomp of Unleashed. You know, that makes it a lot better if you play it on PC. Probably check that out. So this is a podcast about video games.
I think there's a ceiling on how much better Sonic Unleashed could get.
Well, it's already quite high up, relatively speaking.
Yeah, Sonic Unleashed's running stages are pretty good.
The whole werewolf thing.
Yeah, it is quite dragged down by the werehog, but the recomp does make some changes to that sound good, right? Because one of my biggest complaint almost with the werehog stuff is, they're like 2 to 3 times longer than any of the running stages, so you're spending most of your time doing that rather than the fun stuff. But also, it's like every time you got into combat, which is basically all of the werehog stages, it would play the same bit of music. So the whole time you're just listening to this. Well, it's not a bad bit of music, but it was just the same music all the time.
Yeah, okay.
Which gets quite annoying, because you don't necessarily hear the sort of like
nighttime music.
Yeah, the night theme of the stage, which is a bit, which is a little bit to me reminiscent of some of the rougey emerald stages from Sonic Adventure 2, kind of stuff, that kind of style, like a little bit funky. And it's like, yeah, it was some weird choices in that game for sure. Especially the levels where you traverse between day and night, right? And there was an awkward loading pause on the consoles that was different on 360 and PlayStation. But anyway, you can just sort of turn those off on the recomp and be like, yeah, loading's not a problem. Sonic Unleashed was interesting. It felt like they were moving baby steps in the right direction. But and then they did Sonic Generations immediately after that, so it was like, all's good, all's forgiving.
Well, kind of. But then they fucked that up, kind of. Well, they fucked up continuing that.
Yeah.
So we've finally done it. We finally made maybe a good Sonic game. And it's like, well, now we're done. We're done with that concept. Let's go back to making weird shit.
Yeah, and it's strange. Like, what was it, 10 years later or whatever, that everyone's like going, yeah, Sonic Generations X Shadow, really good game, as it turns out. And it's like, yeah, no kidding, we knew that. Now you've added Shadow stuff that's supposedly...
Which is just Sonic stuff again. Because that's how he always used to work.
So where are we at now with Sonic now? With Frontiers done?
Frontiers is done.
We're waiting for the mystery Eternal Sega announcements where it's like, are they ever going to actually do anything apart from the occasional announcements now?
I mean, it's...
or announcements about announcements.
Sonic's 35th anniversary, I think, this year, so everyone's expecting something.
But does Sega care about anniversaries that much? It's Nintendo that does the 5 years, surely.
Oh, yeah, we probably won't get a release, but we'll probably... It's been long... It's been, I think, a long enough gap since Frontiers that we might see an announcement about what they're working on.
Mm.
Or a tease. That's what Sega normally do, right? They'll do like a little 2 seconds that everyone then tries to like figure out what the name of the game is from the shape of Sonic's trail or whatever
right.
it was.
Yes.
What was the name everyone gave to Frontiers before it gave it? Like Sonic Spar or something.
Spark, I think.
Spark, yeah, that sounds right. We should probably play Frontiers, but like,
I mean, we should.
But Zach wants me to hold off until we do it for a video.
Well, so, yeah, obviously.
What's the plan to do it through video? Is it a capture problem or a.
No, it's just a wrong. Oh, I haven't got the game yet.
I haven't actually got a copy. But,
oh, okay. But, is it a PC game?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah.
Okay.
I probably would have sat down and played it on Xbox, to be honest, if it wasn't for me waiting. But.
I feel like that's an important series given the amount of Sonic content that we have on Happy Salad.
Well, yeah.
YouTube channel.
We get it
through. I mean...
Wait for the Sonic 06 recons, but then we can do that as well.
It still plays on my mind that we never finished Sonic Advance 2.
I know. I was thinking about that the other day.
I
just need to sit down with that emulator and just practice, and then we can get through that, and then we'll be done. And then we can go to Sonic Advance 3, which is really the whole reason I wanted to do the Sonic Advance series.
But we didn't do Sonic Advance 1, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, did we? Oh, I can't remember it.
Sonic Advance 1's a much simpler game, which is why it went pretty quick.
I honestly have no recollection of that. I thought we just went to 2 immediately.
But where's the Sonic Spinball video? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, we should do that at some point.
The Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
That doesn't count.
We're missing out.
We need to play Sonic Mania and have that be part of that video.
There is a bit of me that's like, maybe one day we'll cover every Sonic game.
Well, yeah, well, I'm sure we'll get there.
Let's play Sonic Shuffle. the much maligned Dreamcast Mario Party spin-off.
We play that dumb, I don't even remember what it was called, the Sonic fighting game on GBA that I played on an emulator ages ago.
Wasn't that just called Battle?
Maybe, but that doesn't quite sound right, but it might be.
Yeah, something like that.
God, I played that quite a lot on the emulator, and it was like...
It wasn't good!
No. Well, the problem with it was like,
There was 2 of them, wasn't there? They made a sequel.
Maybe. But the trouble with it was that there was like far too much obvious cheese. Whereas like you have this whole system where you have like, you know, it's a weird like isometric brawler, essentially, but you're fighting the other characters. But like... The cheese was like any character that could fly and then do a down attack from the air. That was just the move that you just used continuously because none of the other moves could cope with that.
Right.
You basically just hover above the enemy, just constantly stomping on their head, basically.
So that game's equivalent of just like homing attack spam?
Yeah, pretty much. It was real butt.
I'm not sure it did get a sequel, but it was called Sonic Battle.
Okay.
And it's the second Sonic fighting game after Sonic the Fighters.
That doesn't count. Yeah. Not even the same type of game.
No, Sonic the Fighters was an attempt to port like the Virtua Fighter engine into Sonic. Yeah, there's a few like Sonic. Do you ever want to try and tackle Sonic Rivals? There was 2 of those. The PSP.
Can you even, I mean, I guess the PSP.
PSP emulates real well, so that wouldn't be too difficult to do. But
is there anything to do for that? Really?
I mean, they're kind of boring games.
Yeah.
I played the first one. I haven't played 2, but they're pretty dull. And the 30 FPS was kind of a problem in those games.
Wait for some kind of recons on those.
Yeah. Or maybe there's a hack like. To speed it up on emulation. Don't know. That sometimes happens. Yeah, cover all Sonic games.
That's the goal.
Sonic Drift, or whatever it's called on the Game Gear. Kart racing.
Drift? I don't remember that.
There was like a... Like, obviously on the Game Gear, don't expect much, but it was kind of a kart racer.
Oh, okay.
And they did two of them on the Game Gear as well.
Well, we haven't got a Sonic Chaos video.
We haven't actually got a lot of Sonic videos of the minor stuff. We've only played the major stuff. That was kind of the point.
We've kind of played our favourites as we've gone, really.
Well, the major ones.
I think there's a recomp of Advance 2 coming. Did I say that already? I think there's someone's working on a recomp of Advance 2.
Mm.
Which is interesting.
And then we're always stuck in the eternal problem of how do you make a video of DS games? Because those are the actual good Sonic games.
Right, yeah. we haven't done Rush on Rush Adventure, and those are excellent. I've always had a passing curiosity at the BioWare Sonic game. Dark Chronicle. What was that thing? What was that thing? Tell you what, I introduced Miles. Milesy was mildly interested in some Mario stuff this week.
Wow. Like,
and actually associating with Mario, because I was I'll talk about it a little bit later, but I was playing a little bit more of Mario 3D World. And he was watching me play it and was getting kind of into it, like being like, punch that guy and stuff. And like, get that guy and be like, oh no, and I died. And which was kind of fun. Cool. Like, he's starting to pay attention to what I'm doing in games, which is kind of nice. And before getting bored and then being like, no, the other one. And I'm like, what do you mean the other one? Other one? You mean driving? Yeah. You want to drive Mario in Mario Kart? Yeah. So put Mario Kart on for a bit. And he drives around and goes, what do you want to do? Do you want to just drive around in free roam or do you want to race? Race. And then he goes, okay. And the race starts and he hands the controller at me. And it's like, you want to do this, mate? He's like, no, you do it. It's like, oh.
Okay, you want to see you play.
He's like, you do it. Daddy win. Because I think he just knows I'm going to win. Like, he's just like, right, daddy win.
You're going to crush it.
So that was kind of funny. So I made him. I put the Mario movie on because I noticed it was available on ITVX. And so I've watched that again. It's like, I think I found it less weird on a second viewing, if that makes sense. This is the second time I've seen it now. Like, I think the first time when Zach and I watched it, it was just a little bit like, well, this is slightly strangely paced and da da da. And I don't know. I don't remember feeling like it was a particularly well constructed film necessarily, but it was fine, you know. My opinion on that hasn't really changed, but I think the flow of it, like, coming at it a second time does kind of work okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, it does flow with it. I think the story is stupid, but, like, there is a flow to it, at least. It's all right. But Milesy, yeah, he was into it. He's like, and for a film, right? Like, I haven't really had this success since Cars 1.
Right.
And he really enjoyed it, especially the Donkey Kong fight. He was getting into that.
I mean, I guess, yeah, that's what it's designed for, right? So, yeah. working well.
He enjoyed it. Yeah, and I was having that sort of like, yeah, clearly the only reason I watch these is like as an adult is for the references.
For the references.
Yeah, because they are, the Illumination do their thing. Well, almost like every animated film does. And I've talked about this before, like where the first half an hour is like the best bit of the film, right? Because they're just throwing the world building and they're throwing references out and that's where they can use all the throwaway jokes. And not that there are many in the Mario film, but there's... you know, that's usually the most fun time to be had, personally, is with like the first half an hour of most animated films, and this is no exception. And getting that in there. I felt a little bit sorry, like at some points through the film, for the composer or the scorers, because I was sort of thinking, oh man, they really had to shoehorn the theme into that part, and like they clearly didn't want to do it because the underlying chord progression doesn't match, and not exactly, like especially when they like first arrive at the like Kingdom of the Kongs, and it's like it's starting to play a bit of the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but like underneath like a sinister bed because they're approaching this this ominous door, and it's like, how does
that fit?
It doesn't really is the answer. So I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Kind of feels forced in places.
And there's anyway. A new one, which apparently feels even more forced.
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, but yeah.
I can't. They're just ticking boxes to be like, oh, well, let's just get these Mario entities in there.
Making money.
Yeah. Well, speaking on the subject of making money, there was like a little thing about, like, well, about Shigsy sort of insinuating that, like, their move into movies was because Nintendo thinks they've almost capped their market now. It's like, you know, it's like, we're not growing particularly anymore.
Yeah.
Like, fair. we have our market, so we've got to grow in other ways. And that's movies and mass media.
And the
Universal Studios, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. But I still am worried about the live-action Zelda. I still think that's a bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be any worse than any other Zelda TV project, right? There was a... around the time of the Super Mario Super Show, there was a Legend of Zelda show that was awful.
But it was funny awful.
Yeah.
In the same way as the Mario one. I mean,
immediately after watching... Super Mario Brothers the movie, I did notice that Sky suggested to me that Amazon Prime had the Super Mario Super Show, and I'm like, seriously?
Really?
So I put it on. And it's other than the intro music, which is obviously a banger, jam for the ages. I'm hooked on the brothers. The rest of the show is utter garbage. Like, they don't even draw Bowser right. I suppose, like, Bowser wasn't necessarily as defined as he is now.
Peach
is like
old school different Peach as well, obviously, at that point.
Yeah, Peach is a little strange. Toad is the attitude guy, weirdly. He, like, everything is like dudes and and bodacious. It's really strange. And the first episode they had on Amazon Prime is a weird Romeo and Juliet ripoff where, like, humans are fighting because Bowser has weirdly started a feud, and, like, these, for some reason, these Italian guys have shy guys that shoot missiles at each other. It's really odd. Like, it's just a very, very odd show. That's not well animated. All the voices are obviously strange, especially the Mario Brothers. And then I mean, like, the live action stuff, which is like even weirder. Like, I kind of didn't realize just how old Mario and Luigi look in that stuff. They already look positively ancient. And have the gruffest voices imaginable. it's a properly odd thing. Go check it out.
How do they compare to, like, Bob Hoskins or whatever?
I mean, Bob Hoskins is a smooth talker compared to this guy.
Right, yeah.
Mousy was not so into that.
No. Yeah.
But weirdly, like, in the middle of the show, there was an ad for the Legend of Zelda cartoon that with the tag, like, coming this Friday or something on it. Like,
the new one?
No.
Oh, no, the cartoon.
The Saturday morning cartoon, or whenever the Super Show was on, they were like, I guess in America, they were like, well, we know this is going to air. So, like, as part of the show, there's, like, a little cutaway to an ad for the Legend of Zelda cartoon saying, with a big This Friday tag on it, which is kind of a weird time capsule thing. The live action even does a, they talk to the camera to be like, at one point, to be like, while we deal with this, here's a trailer. And it's like, it's kind of strange.
Well, excuse me, princess. All right, well, that's 80/90s cartoon news.
Yeah. It does, like, watching the Super Mario film did kind of, like, put that thought in my head. It's like, what if Sega hadn't made Sonic in Sonic live action and they had just gone this route instead? Would it have been good?
Well, we know what it was. It would have been Sonic Prime, because that's what they made. Essentially.
Well, that's what Netflix made. I don't think that really counts. Like,
I don't know. I sort of think they've sort of done well to differentiate themselves by doing the weird live action thing. I think they seem to be successful. They keep making them, so
yeah. Even if the films don't feel particularly, the core plot of them doesn't feel very like of the first. I've only seen the first two, admittedly, but like the core plots don't feel very Sonic. The first one's just a standard like buddy cop movie, isn't it? Or like road trip,
kind of.
But like road trip movie. It's like there's nothing really innovative about it. They're just less interesting as a result.
Not enough Chaos Emeralds.
And the ability to reference is a lot lower, right? There's still some.
That's true.
But like, they're
like, yes, but that's like better, isn't it? To not have all the really obvious references thrown directly at
you. Yeah, I guess they're not obvious.
You just like, do side references.
Like, what was the name of the coffee shop? The coffee shop was a reference. Was that like Green Hill Coffee or something?
Well, the town was called Green Hills. That's the point.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Green Sonic's Hills, World, Montana, though, right? Yeah, and even though Sonic's world he came from was Green Hill Zone, it's like they don't call it that in this, right? Like, it doesn't have a name as far as we know. Yeah. It's just Sonic's world. Anyway, yeah, that's what I've been doing with my time.
Not playing games.
Well, yeah, there's been... Easter kind of does that because people want to do things. And as a result...
Not least... Yeah.
As a result, that means I don't actually get much time to just sit and play.
And to top it off, there's not very much news to talk about.
There isn't a lot of news.
What have we got?
Amazon Luna. Remember that?
No.
Anyone?
I have forgotten.
Amazon Luna is Amazon's attempt at Stadia, essentially.
Oh, streaming. Okay.
It is their game streaming service. I think it kind of, like, they used the Luna brand to take over from Prime Gaming to some extent, where Prime Gaming was kind of like, oh, you have an Amazon Prime subscription? Cool, we'll give you some free shit every now and then, like Epic does. And I think they still do that from time to time, just not as dramatically as they used to. Anyway, Luna, the streaming service, is very soon going to start removing access to paid games, as in games you purchased for the purpose of playing through the service. A little bit like Stadia's model was going to be, right? Like, buy a copy of Assassin's Creed, you can play it. That's what you can access to play it. No subscription, you just buy the game, right? Anyway, they're stopping that, and the games you paid for are going to be removed from the service, and unlike Google Stadia's shutdown, they're not offering refunds for any of that. There is one silver lining, which is that games from EA and Ubisoft... the games you bought will be added to the Origin and the Ubisoft launchers. Right, so you can still, technically you still have the game, you just can't stream them anymore. You have to play them through on an actual PC. So I guess that's something.
Right.
Probably their excuse for not offering the refunds. But I don't know, like, does that cover like every game? Like, I'm not sure. Like, there must be a bunch that like is just like, nope, there's no recourse, you're boned, go buy it again. Kind of like, yeah, the risk of any service that is reliant on always online tech, like it can die at any moment.
But I just think that's just not the right model for streaming games. It needs to be like Netflix, where you just pay a subscription.
Hello, then... Game Pass.
Yeah, exactly. But with the streaming part.
Yeah, I mean, Game Pass Ultimate gets you Xbox Cloud, right?
So
you
can, right.
Because everything's an Xbox, according to that Microsoft ad campaign, right?
But what do those games actually run on in the cloud? Are they Xboxes in the cloud?
I believe so, yeah. They're Xbox equivalent, or at least Xbox equivalent hardware, something like that.
Right, okay.
I think when the service first opened, they were running it on something equivalent to... I forget where actually when it originally opened, they were probably running on Xbox One S's or something like that, like because I guess it predated the series, and then I think Series came out and they ran it on Series S's, not Series X's. I don't know. It's always been a little funky with that, and like the Xbox Gaming Cloud, whilst functional, just has been nowhere near as good as Nvidia's service. So if you're gonna do that stuff, Nvidia's the one to go for, but I would still say don't do it. Because you might lose access to your stuff at any time. I think Nvidia's was weird. Like, I think Nvidia, you can actually you sign into your Steam account on, like, a remote PC and then play your games on that machine or something. I don't know, really know how it works. It's a bit funny. Because then surely you have to wait for it to download? I don't know. It's a bit strange.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't know. It must be more complex than that. Or maybe, like, maybe they link the Steam account and link you to a device that already has it
on.
It like,
could have had everything on Steam just pre-downloaded, but that would be a bit much.
Yeah, it's probably not possible. But yeah, as I've talked about before, the whole sunlight and sunshine and moonlight experience that from Nvidia's Shield tech is like, yeah, the latency there must be pretty good. Anyway, that's pretty much the one news story I have. Like,
well, there was the news that I guess Nintendo's Pokemon patents got rejected in the US, so maybe Power World is good now. Except it's only the US versions of those patents, and the Japanese ones are probably still there.
Wait. So hang on. So what does that actually mean? Like, the patent got rejected? Oh, right. So Nintendo can't hold the patent.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened was that, like, somehow someone got through to the US government and made them take another look at those patents. And then then eventually, of course, because it's the government, it takes like 6 months for anything to happen. They're like, oh, yeah, these patents are bullshit.
Right.
Although that may also be somewhat dependent on the fact that they were like those weird sub-patent things where they were tacked onto pre-existing patents, which is why the filing dates are all weird and all that stuff. It may not be entirely contingent on the actual patents being bullshit. It may also be partially because of this weird trick that they tried to use. But yeah, apparently the US versions of those patents got removed.
Interesting. Okay.
But obviously the lawsuit is more dependent on the Japanese ones because it's a Japanese lawsuit.
Sure.
And then people got, you know, overly enthusiastic about the concept of Nintendo losing those patents and being like, oh, finally we have proof that video game patents are bullshit so everyone can make a Nemesis system. And it's like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
No.
No one's going to risk that still.
No.
Yeah.
Even if there is this tiny amount of precedent now. And then,
potentially good news for Power World and
yes.
Pokemon. What was the other one that was coming up soon? I forget.
There's
what that was
Temtem called. Pioneers coming, which sounds like.
Well, Temtem was
already a thing. Yeah.
Temtem was always. Well, Temtem's like.
New Temtem.
Yeah, but that was like. The original was Pokemon adjacent, but not. Yes. I don't think it infringes in any way, right? Like,
well, you know, I mean, at the time, everyone was infringing an equal amount. No one cared before Power World happened. And Temtem wasn't that long before Power World. It was like slightly before.
Yeah, well, by the time it actually released.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then just for almost certainly only a coincidence, but hilarious timing, No Man's Sky update happened, and it's Pokemon in No Man's Sky.
Wait, what?
the creatures that you can have as pets now have like stats and shit, so you can battle them.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
I mean, that kind of makes sense for No Man's Sky.
Kind
somehow.
Of. But that was just a hilarious bit of timing. Where it's like, oh, look, the Nintendo fans have been revoked, so obviously it's safe to make Pokemon in No Man's Sky, so this is just a giant coincidence.
I did see a comic book frame the other day of some big, muscly guy with the Atlas, like, head, or the, you know, from the box art, the sort of diamond-y triangle thing.
Yeah.
Just sort of breaking into someone's house going, free content! And there's just a line of people saying, we'll pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the memes of No Man's Sky, where it's like they've never charged for any of this 16 years of updates. Not
Wait,
even like
16 Sky years? Can't be that long.
That long. Wow, amazing.
10, 11?
I mean, plausibly.
It came out in 2016, right? So it must be 10 now.
Yeah, plausibly 10. I was about to say 16. That's a long time.
I guess it's been 16 updates, maybe. I forget what number the major update number is by this point.
Yeah, I'd believe that.
Do you think they should have put more aspects of Spore into No Man's Sky, where like people?
Well, I mean, that would have been a more advanced version of the creature system that already existed. Because like the whole like you can like. When you get the creatures as pets, you can then take the eggs and put it into like the genetic manipulation machine and like change the like offsprings. So you can, but you can only do like very general stuff, like make it bigger or smaller or more passive or whatever, because they do like run around and do stuff when they're actually out. But like, you can't manipulate any of the actual like parts directly, and that would be like, if you wanted to go that way, you could go, you could just like go directly into that procedural generation system and just be like, I want this part, this part, this part, slap them together.
That's kind of how Spore worked, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, except you just had an army of giant walking penises, right?
Sometimes.
I seem to remember, because it was crowdsourced, sort of, right?
Well, kind of, yeah. Any creatures that were made went into a database, and then the ones that could show up in your world were started pulling from that, right?
Yeah. But I feel like combine that with No Man's Sky and with Pokemon. Oh, my God.
I reckon that server is still up. Like, can you still load up Spore now?
I mean, you can still run Spore now. I know that much, but I don't know what the actual, what whether it has contingency on its back end stuff or not. So I'm pretty sure it doesn't run, because like there was that whole thing, because Spore was one of those early ish games of the type where like it didn't need to be always online, but it was, and then it had a whole DRM problem.
Oh boy, did it. Yeah. Whenever we talk about Spore, my head always goes, oh yeah, like if I wanted to, how would I like disassociate Spore from the very first PC I ran it on?
Well, you have like two installs at least.
Yeah, but like that was how it worked. It was limited number of installs, and you had to go make an effort to try and dissociate a previous PC before you could run it again.
Yeah,
it's like, is that even how it works? Did they actually strip that out?
I think they might have,
because it's
point.
On Origin now, right?
So yeah,
you can just run it that
way. Well, but that doesn't necessarily mean they got rid of that system.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean a thing.
I mean, I it wasn't for Spore. I think it was for SimCity 4, but at some point I had to send a photograph of my physical disc to support to get it to associate to something from an account somewhere.
God.
Which is like, that's stupid, but it is like, that is the best kind of physical DRM, I guess.
I guess.
A literal photograph of the disc.
As long as you're not just like finding that on Google.
Well, sure, yeah. But this was quite a long time ago when that wasn't as much of a concern. You can't AI generate that picture back then. You could now, quite easily. With a date on it and everything.
Yeah. Fudge that metadata easily. Suppose you could have it. You need to put like today's newspaper in the
shot.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, newspapers. First, you've got to find one. Is that it for news? Are we done with news?
Yeah, I guess.
Anything else really actually happening?
No.
Nothing happening.
It's like, I thought I heard there was some sort of Xbox indie thing.
Yeah, I think I saw a couple of things come out of that. I mean, I guess there's a new Don't Starve coming.
Oh, is there?
Apparently.
What, like a whole new game rather than like
it looks like it, yeah. It looks like it looks very similar, but like the way the camera moves and the way the terrain looks like, yeah, this might be a new engine, so I guess it's a new game.
Yeah.
An actual new game.
It's weird, like given how little coverage that event seems to have had, like I just assumed like there was nothing of interest. But yeah, a new Don't Starve seems like a...
Well, I mean, Don't Starve isn't... Maybe it will get more popular this time around, because it was so niche when the original Don't Starve came out, and that was only a single-player game, so obviously that limited its scope as well. And then by the time Don't Starve Together came around, it was like, it got a little bit popular, but it still wasn't really the right time for that kind of game back then. Whereas now, maybe it'll work. Maybe you can get that, like, multiplayer co-op thing in a weird world that, you know, I mean, it's not exactly what they would call a friend slop game or anything, because it's actually quite hardcore. Don't Starve is fucking difficult.
Wait, hang on. What is friend slop? Like,
well, it's what, like, that's the like what they're using now to be the genre term for, like, you know, peak and
okay,
all those, like, the, what is it fucking
like
called?
Big Walk. Are you thinking of that?
Yeah,
as well?
That as well. Like, but yeah.
Big Walk looks fun.
What is that fucking, it's something company?
I don't think we should use slop for things that are not AI.
Not actually slop, yes. No. I know that is the problem. Yeah. But that is what that is the term that is starting to come up now.
It's just the genre. Like, yeah. There should be a cozy, friendly co-op games.
That's why you get this one term that people start using, and then that just becomes it, unfortunately.
Friend slop doesn't work for me. Like, just friend game makes somewhat sense.
Lethal Company, that's what I was thinking of. Even though that's not, you wouldn't think that's as cozy, but it is kind of the same.
It's kind of, that's sort of like,
but it's the,
that's almost bordering on like extraction shooter, but without the PvP element.
Well, yeah, but that's what it means. It's not so much about the coziness factor. It's about being a purely co-op game with like weirdly jank mechanics, kind of. That is kind of what that genre is meant to be referring
to. But then I also associate that with like the non-co-op stuff, like in my head, like the back rooms and horror.
There's been plenty of co-op back rooms games as well,
right? Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, kind of all of those. Kind of as soon as you mention something like Lethal Company, that's like that's the genre that comes into me. Like that's more the. I mean, jank horror.
I think that's where it started, but like it sort of evolved into things like Peak, where it's like. Mm. It's that same, I mean, it's that janky physics that is sort of a remnant of, like, the Totally Accurate Battle Simulator and stuff, even though that's not even... No, that is the same company. Peak is the same company that did Totally Accurate Battle Simulator.
Oh, yeah,
and
interesting.
I'm pretty sure that's right. But yeah, that janky physics engine that they have...
Right, yeah.
that's kind of inherent to those games.
Mm.
Even in the cases of like Lethal Company and stuff, there's as much less jank, but it is still kind of jank.
There's definitely a charm to that, and because you could also start throwing Goat Simulator into the mix for that, right?
And there's Repo as well. That's the other one, I guess.
Is the
sort of mid-step between Lethal Company and Peak in the progression of being less horror-y, but still kind of horror-y, but also more jank physics. But yeah, I don't know if Don't Starve can capture any of that market because it's way more hardcore. Or maybe it's not this time around, although when you look at this trailer they showed, it still just looks like Don't Starve to me.
Okay. Well, even same art. Like...
Yeah. Same kind of combat going on and that kind of thing.
I mean, Don't Starve's, I guess, like in a bit of a corner. Like, you can't necessarily change the art. Unless like change the lead guy, I suppose. The lead, like, that's my association with Don't Starve, is just that guy's face.
Well, yeah, he's still there. Although I never got enough into Don't Starve or Don't Starve Together, but suppose, because there's a lot of other characters, they just like, I think you have to unlock quite a few of them. Hmm. But like, apparently that the main guy, Wilson, he's actually one of the worst characters. Right. It's like, it's really terrible to play as him, supposedly, compared to a lot of the other characters.
But then maybe that makes sense as an opening character that everyone knows, like, because it's the start of the game, like, everyone's that guy at some point.
Wouldn't you, in theory, want that to be like the easy character, not the annoying character?
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Every time I've gone back to try and play an actual original Don't Starve, not the multiplayer, it's like, I'd like to progress in this game, but it's really annoying to progress in this game. You have to it's almost a grind, because you do have to play as like each individual character and get a certain distance in, and I guess Don't Starve also, after Don't Starve Together came out, started backporting mechanics of like the different layers and stuff, and it got really complicated.
So it's a kind of rogue, in like the roguelike-y elements are not necessarily to your liking.
Yeah, I mean, that is always the problem with Don't Starve, is that like it requires you to invest a lot of time to make progress in like building a base and everything, but then everything just gets destroyed immediately by like one bad thing happening, and then you're basically fucked and you have to start over. It's quite annoying.
I mean, that's sort of my beef with any like long run roguelike. Like, it's like, don't make them long runs. Like, it's like, that's frustrating.
I mean, I think Don't Starve's problem on that front was just that, like, once they started adding more stuff to allow you to build more base stuff, they also started trying to inherently counteract that by basically making enemies that specifically spawn when you start building space stuff to destroy your base stuff. And it's like, that's just annoying. And you don't have like tower defense or anything. Well, I mean, you kind of do eventually a little bit, but like, there's no, it's not like you're meant to have a tower defense system. It's not, you know, it's not a gameplay element like that. It's just like, you just have this thing where it's like, if you build a certain amount of stuff, you know that these enemies are going to start spawning and they're going to come and fuck up your shit. Or you don't know, which is obviously a problem the first time it happens.
You don't know.
Or you just read the wiki, of course. The solution to every problem.
I suppose the only other bit of news is we've all watched that Forza Horizon 6 opening now.
For as much as
and there's still no signs of the tone of the voiceovers, really.
Nope.
Still don't really know what that's like. We know the radio is the same. Because it's your boy, Scotty Tyler, on the radio. So that's the same. But that's okay. The radio isn't what I'm worried about. The radio, like, presenters were always kind of, like, borderline acceptable, I suppose, because they do just, like, do this standard... The integration is fine, right? Like you do one of those showcase events, and then whatever radio station you happen to be on, you'll get a bit of voiceover of, like, of them going, whoa, wasn't that mad? That was so crazy. They jumped the thing, and then they went to the finish line, and it was a... You know, that kind of DJ spiel. That's fine. Right, it's kind of throwaway. I'm not too worried about that, but it's the, it's the tone of, hey, superstar, you gonna go do this thing? Am I gonna talk over this event you're doing for the entire thing?
Yeah,
is that voiceover gonna continue again when I retry that same event with no option to turn it off? That's my biggest fear. Oh, and I would quite like them to change the driving model, but they're not gonna do that. Because I'm kind of that annoying place with Horizon where wherever I go to it and I try and make the cars, try and use the fast cars, it's like, the handling model I have does not look like the handling model all the AI cars have. And it's like, because of the difficulty level I'm playing at. And that is a known problem with the Forza series. Like, the AI is just better than you and has different physics, like, as you up the difficulty levels.
So is it time for you to... get like 1 month of Game Pass again for this?
I don't know. If it's good enough, I might consider buying it because I do like having the Horizon games to hand. Right. I do just dip into them periodically. Like, as much as I rag on Horizon, like, there is still something there. There's still a nice pick up and play. I'm just going to do a little bit here and there. Like, I'm still dipping into Forza 4's Lego.
Yes, but that's because you bought a DLC. That's like that's a different situation.
I bought the game outright because I was coming. But, well, partly because I like of the whole delisting thing, and it went super cheap because of that. So, you know, it's like I wouldn't have access to this game or the DLC if that hadn't happened. Which is, you know, slightly nervous. That's probably going to happen to 5 in a couple years' time.
No, I think, I don't know, I've been out of it for, I haven't really played since the 2, I think, Forza Horizon 2, I played a bit of.
I liked 2. 2, 2.
Was, yeah, 2 was good.
2, 2 felt nice, yeah. And it was kind of like, at the time, I mean, it still is a bit of a technical marvel, but like, you know, the jump from... the Xbox 360 experience of the original Forza Horizon to Europe's Forza Horizon 2 running on Xbone. It's like, okay, that's quite a jump.
Hmm.
And it looks real nice.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get those kind of jumps anymore.
Yeah.
This isn't going to look massively... It's just the art direction and stuff, right? I think it looks like they're putting... It's a bit... I don't know. Nothing against Mexico, but it is a bit of a desert in comparison. Sure, they could do a lot more kind of biome stuff with Japan.
Absolutely, yeah. It's definitely a more enticing environment. That's all I've really got for news.
Yeah. Well, it's time for what you've been playing then. Who we start with this week? Perhaps with Zach.
Well, I know I sometimes say this, but, like, I really don't have anything to talk about this week.
Oh, no.
And then here I am talking about stuff. I mean, I played Captain Industries some more, and that's not really anything to say about that. I still haven't actually...
Just still doing the grind.
Yeah, I still haven't actually built a bridge yet.
Oh.
I'm very close to, like, needing to, because, like, the... Well, there's no aluminium on the island that I'm on, so, like, I'm gonna... Either I'm gonna have to build an annoying, like, amphibious vehicle shipping route, or just build a bridge. So I might just build a bridge. Although, I was looking at the island, because it's, like, this little sort of, like, long island that sits next to the main island that my that the main base is on. And it has, like, two flat bits at each end where you kind of need a flat bit to end the bridge at, which is kind of why you'd use the amphibious trucks to go, like, set that up, but it's, like, pre-made flat. So, like, oh, this is a convenient place to attach your bridge. But, like, from either end of that island, the way you'd have to attach a bridge to it kind of sucks. So, like, on one side, you can make a short bridge that goes kind of uphill onto the main, onto a ledge on the main island. But then you'd have to, like, build all these other, like, ramps and shit because it's halfway up a mountain on that side. Mm. Or on the other side of the long thin island, it's like, it's at the same level as the back of the main island, so the bridge is at least flat. But the only way to get it over there is to do, like, a weird S-bend bridge that, like, jangly curves away from the edge of the island on one side and curves back in on the other. Because the bridges are... They're using the same kind of building technique as the railways, but that means that, like... Well, basically, you can only do, like, 45-degree turns on the bridges. And I don't think it will actually let you start or end a bridge at 45 degrees. It'll only let you end it at 90 degrees to the grid.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
So you have to curve into
it. So you have to, like, that's why it's an S-bend. Because if you could do a 45 degree, you could come at, you could at least do, like, a 45 degree curve where you can't start at 45 degrees and end at 90
sure.
degrees.
Yeah.
But you can't, as far as I can tell. So you have to do this weird S-bend where the start and the end are facing essentially the same direction.
Mm.
Or linearly the same direction. But yeah, I haven't actually built that bridge yet. I was just, like, laying it out and being like, this is going to look kind of weird. But luckily, I also don't have to worry about any ship traffic going through that, going, like, under that bridge, because that, like, that's on the back of the island, so there's no, none of my ships are ever going to pass through there, so I don't need to worry about clearance or anything. Although I think it's plenty high enough that all the ships would be able to go under it anyway. And I was also trying to decide whether I want to build the more expensive, like, 4-lane bridge or the cheap 2-lane bridge. But the trouble is that because of the way the lanes are assigned, if you build the 2-lane bridge, it can only be road or rail. You can't have both on a 2-lane bridge. Because when you make it a road, it uses both of the lanes for each direction of the road, obviously. Whereas when you're using the 4-lane bridge, you can have rail and road on the same bridge. Or just twice as much road, or twice as much rail. But when I looked at the actual cost, it turns out that the cost of the bridges is mostly... Like, it seems like the length of the bridge determines the cost in steel, and then the type of bridge basically determines the cost in concrete. So, like, the 2-lane bridge and the 4-lane bridge of the same length cost almost the same amount of steel, but, like, the 4-lane bridge just costs, like, twice as much concrete. Weirdly.
Is it like tarmac cost? Is that what it's trying to convey?
Or? No, I think it's more like the pillars and stuff, because they're just, it's just bigger in general.
More weight, yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I haven't built that yet. I did get, you know, I got the nuclear plant back up and running, so I'm generating the required amount of nuclear waste to unlock the tier 2 nuclear plant, because that, I did remember that this time. Didn't get annoyingly janked by thinking I could skip ahead to the second nuclear plant directly. I remembered that you have to generate shitty nuclear waste before you can do it a better way.
Yeah.
That was kind of the main thing that I played, even though I haven't played that much of it, and it's just been one of those weeks where I somehow haven't played virtually anything but Captain Infinity. I've been checking in on Enfield still.
Oh, really?
Mainly, I mean, the next major patch is about to come up this week, I think.
By major, you mean like the next...
Yes,
like,
the next chunk of map and stuff, yes. Yeah. So I've been keeping an eye on that and looking at the previews of the characters that I'm not going to get, because I'm kind of out of that loop now, out of the free stuff loop. I mean, I have been...
Are they not ice? Or...
Well, I mentioned the before that one that was ice, but then like the one after that did turn out, as I predicted, to be like physical and a tiny amount of fire. Judging by her character.
Just a little bit of fire.
Just a tiny amount of fire. Not enough to combo off the fire. Her combos are more on the physical side. Hmm. Although she does have the most interesting combo like attack so far, because her combo is like two steps, and then one of them requires timing. So you like the first, when you hit the first button to trigger it, the second button press has to be timed correctly to get the full effect.
Okay.
It's like, yeah. Oh, that's actually kind of a
slightly different mechanic.
Yeah. Makes you think a bit more. Like, although it's not quite as fun as...
Like when they throw those characters in Hyrule Warriors. Yeah. And they're like, oh, right, you know, I need to focus
although on... Although that's quite a lot harder in that game to yeah. focus on. Although I do kind of prefer... It's more satisfying in Enfield when you get the character combos where, like, all their combos trigger at the same time, so you just get, like, four icons to go off and you just go, ee-ee-ee-ee, and just mash all of everyone's combos at once. And then things explode. Yeah, I've been saving up the free stuff that you do still get, the little trickle, until it's like, I'll find one character more that I'm going to actually want that's not going to be ice. That's the main thing. Hopefully one of the lesser used elements will have an actual character that will be useful for a combo to actually make an interesting team.
At least for a moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like once you get into the daily grind of that game, you're even really fighting. The daily grind is a lot of not fighting. It's like, oh, you can run around and collect all these resources that respawn daily, and you can, like, collect all the stuff that your ship generates over time daily, and, like, jump onto other people's ships to trade the trade goods and stuff for extra money daily. But it's just like, there's not so much actual fighting. Because you're limited by your that sanity currency, where it's just like, that's where the fighting comes in, and you can only do, like, two or three of those fights per day.
Right.
And then also because, obviously, when you're going around collecting the resources on the map, if you've built zip lines, you're not even... having any enemies get in the way because you're just ziplining past them all.
Right.
There's no fighting there either. I mean, it appears they've been trying to add more like side event stuff over time, where it's just like it's all the weird little mini game things which are them having to come up with things working in a very limited system where it's like, oh, right, this is the mini game where you just throw a bunch of bombs. Because that's one of the few other mechanics that isn't just, you know, the normal fighting.
Yeah, that sounds pretty MMO-y, right?
Yeah, it's like, basically.
We've got this, or Yakuza-y, actually, in some ways. It's like, we've got this framework, what can we put within it?
Yeah, it might be a problem. Because, I mean, the last event that they had, which I guess sort of makes sense, was it's like a Mario... Mario Sunshine, where you have this jet drone thing for spraying liquids around that's part of the story. So they did a mini event where it's like, oh, now we're going to clean up all this shit that's been spread all over the place.
Oh, right.
Reuse that mechanic.
But this time with clean stuff.
Yeah. With time trials, kind of. Not really time trials. It was more like a leaderboard, I suppose. See which one of your friends list can do it the fastest. So yeah, they might. It's a slight problem of that game systems where it's like they're limited by what they can do, and how can they fill up the time between these updates without having to do so much work? I guess.
Yeah. Not everyone has Fortnite level teams. Not even Fortnite has a Fortnite level team.
No longer.
No.
And that was pretty much all I played. Really? Rocket League.
That is quite a quiet couple weeks for you. Yeah.
I did have the fun time of Rocket League having where it's like the indicator that I'm probably at exactly the right rank where in two consecutive games someone called me a smurf and called me trash. And it's like, hey. So I must be at exactly the right skill level.
What's the third statement so you can get bingo?
I don't think there is a third one on that. That's the good end and the bad end. I don't think there is a middle end, is there?
Smurf, trash. GG. I don't know.
I mean, I guess they could call you like hella average, but that's not a thing that people say.
Yeah, does anyone go, this guy's mean?
Maybe. But yes, in consecutive games, being like Smurf and Trash, it's like, oh, I must be in exactly the right rank, then.
Yeah, that balances out.
And that's it. That's me. Now we can go to Rob and catch up with some stuff. Except maybe not, apparently.
See if I can remember. Like, because as I say, last time we ran long, so I didn't mention everything. But like, hey, weeks have passed. Okay, it's not relevant anymore.
Was it ever relevant? Did you play anything like new?
I talked about the stuff I did play that was new. Let's start with Dave the Diver, which I'm continuing to. Man, this game's real good. it's really good. I've reached a point where, you know, I think I described before where I had the fishing during the day and the selling stuff at night, like loop kind of going on. Yeah, there's quite a lot more to that game than just that, as it turns out. You get to a certain point and it starts exploding with different mechanics and different places you can go. I don't know how spoilery I want to get with some of this, but because some of it is mechanical, but there is a point where you start helping out a village and doing odd jobs for them, some of which are in the sea, some of which aren't, some of which are cooking challenges and things like that. You end up with a farm, so you end up, you want to start collecting fish eggs. So you can start like breeding the fish. You don't have to fish for certain fish so much. You start get there is an actual farm as well. So you can start growing good rice rather than the crappy regional rice, apparently. So for your sushi restaurant, and so that's
regional rice.
I know. Yeah.
So you could stomach that.
So that's something I'm going to have to start engaging with. I only got that one pretty recently. There's a whole bunch of mini games that start happening and you can start engaging with to earn money of various kinds. The story gets a bit more deeper and a bit there were whole like cutaway cutscenes of describing like the backstories of characters that just came out of nowhere, almost like just at the end of a shift someone goes, yeah, should we talk, like, just gets a bit drunk and starts telling you about this story. And it's like, oh, this is a whole thing. This is a whole sequence. I've got to sit through. There was one night where, like, the game just, like, cut away to one of the people you ring. There's a guy called Duff who you ring up who is a bit of an otaku. And he builds the weapons for you and stuff that you can take and upgrades the weapons for you. But it just goes into this, like, utterly bizarre dream sequence that he was in. I don't know if you've seen those videos of Japanese concerts, like the Splatoon concert, where like they all have glow sticks,
right,
and they're singing along to stuff on stage. And so there's like a rhythm game where you're doing that in this guy's dream. Whilst I'm not even sure if the anime this like is real, but there's like a if it's not real, it's like they went to the effort of making a whole ass anime intro sequence that plays in the background of the stage during this sequence. It's like, that's a lot of effort to go to for this little mini game. And it just keeps like throwing things like that at you. And it's just like, that was quite a lot of effort for them to go to for this little sequence or this animation. And it's like, what? Yeah, this game's good. And it's really satisfying, and the music is consistently good. I'm super into the like the especially the restaurant music, like where you get this cool like hip hop combined with, I don't know what the Japanese sort of like tang sort of instrument is. I don't know what that's actually called. I forget, but not a sitar, but like, because that's Indian. But you know what I mean. So there's something that makes that very specific like ta ta tang sort of noise.
Right.
I forget what that's called. But yeah, sort of hip-hop infused with that, because sushi, which is so cool. And then it goes a bit jazzier when a VIP turns up, so you get this like little jazzy lick on top, and then it's like, yeah, that's cool as well. And you're just sort of bopping along with it the whole time. I really like this game. My only sort of real beef with it is that it doesn't, I mentioned before, it doesn't frame pace particularly well on Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Turns out,
do you know if that's a Steam Deck thing? Or
no, as it turns out, that's a PC port thing. So it's not great on my PC either. It's a little bit juddery. Because what I did is I actually hooked up, I talked about it earlier, but I hooked up some Apollo on my PC and then used the Moonlight client to stream it to my, on my Xbox, to stream it to my TV in the living room from my PC, which... it's still bewilderingly good how well that works. Like no,
right.
Almost no latency. I was streaming at 4K 60 as well, and it was just working. It was just great, but the frame pacing was still a problem. Apparently, it's to do with Unity animation tick rates.
Because the
game is Unity engine based, but like. By default, Unity apparently works at an animation tick rate of 50 FPS, which
what?
Is
why?
It's a weird choice. Yeah, you can change that, but like that, some suspect that they just for some reason didn't here, and so it results in this choppiness. I think it's more choppy than that suggests on a Steam Deck, so I'm not totally convinced that's the reason. And they've apparently like sorted that on the Switch edition, which runs at 30 FPS, but it's at solid 30 FPS. So they've done something to change it there. But yeah, that's the only real technical shortcut. Like the only real shortcoming of the game at all, as far as I'm concerned, is that it's the technical presentation isn't perfect, which is a real shame because yeah, I'm super interested. Like. They've got a chunky DLC coming later this year.
Really?
Which seems interesting. Like almost a completely different. Like it's almost a sequel by the looks of it. Like like Dave goes to the jungle and they open a jungle restaurant and there's like looks like there's like some dungeon crawling going on and stuff in this DLC and it's like man they go places in this game. They do a lot of stuff. There's a Godzilla DLC that was free that apparently I can't access till I get to a certain point in the game. And it's like, what is that going to be? And I don't think I'm about approaching 20 hours in, I think. And I don't think I'm that far in. So I think this game is quite big.
Wow.
It took me like maybe 10 hours before I realized I was cocking up the restaurant system for quite a bit. Like, because what I didn't, top tip, what I didn't realize is that when you put stuff on the menu to sell, like you are committing ingredients to that item, right? Which kind of makes sense if you think about it realistically, right? It's like if you're doing prep before service, it's like you've got to prep your ingredients for it. But what I didn't realize is that obviously that means those, at the end of the shift, those ingredients are gone. Like, so anything you commit to your menu
right,
seems gone. Like, there is an alternate option that I think might... Like, so you can set those numbers yourself. Like, I only want to sell this much. So now like now I'm maintaining that a little bit. But there's also this option like called auto supply that I'm not 100% sure I understand what it does. I think it always makes sure that if you sell something, like it automatically commits the ingredients for the next item automatically. So you're always at risk of discarding one, I suppose, if you put that option on. But I'm not quite sure. It hasn't explained that part of the game particularly well, but I sort of figured that out after a while, like noticing a little bit of scrolling text that was... Well, I tried to change my menu was what tipped me off. And when I tried to change the menu mid-shift, it was like, yeah, all those ingredients are going to go if you do this. And I'm like, wait, what? But... I haven't made that food yet. I haven't sold it. It's like, no, those ingredients are going to go. They're going to get discarded. And I'm like, oh, okay. I've been doing this wrong. I've been wasting a lot of fish. I've been wasting a lot of food.
But now you know.
Now
the
I
more
know.
You know.
Yeah,
yes.
Now I know. So I could have a lot more stuff in stock, which would be good. But yeah, there's like... there's VIPs you have to take care of, so you have to cook them special dishes, which means you have to go get the ingredients for those dishes, and then during service, make sure you give the dish to them, not other people that could be ordering it off the menu, which is kind of funny, because I cocked that up a few times with one guy. And he was the guy that gave me the fish farm and the farms, so I probably should have done that a lot earlier if I'd got that right. There's events that happen every now and then where, you know, there's going to be some sort of tourist thing in the region, and like people are going to come to celebrate the jellyfishes, for instance. So make sure you have a bunch of jellyfish dishes. Come celebrate the jellyfishes by eating them.
Right, enjoy. You have the jellyfish.
Yeah. So there's quite a lot going on, and yeah, I dig it. It's like I think when you get to like the village and help out, the pace slows down a fair bit from the core loop that I really, really engaged with. But like, cause there's a lot to do in the village, at least at first. And that is a little bit of just busy work. Like go here, go here, go here, go here. So like slight weird pacing change, but, yeah, what a thing. I was having a good day when I bought that and Balatro on the same day.
Who the heck came up with the idea for Dave the Diver?
Dave the Diver, yeah. It's made by Mint Rocket. I don't know if I've heard of them do anything else. I haven't looked, in fairness. But, great game. Really enjoying it. This is going to keep me busy for a little bit longer. You'll be hearing about it again next time, I'm sure. What else I've been doing? Stuff you've heard me talk about before. I've played more Mario 3D World. That hasn't nearly held my attention as much as I would like, I guess. Like, I guess it's sort of sitting next to Dave the Diver, which is just far too appealing, so it's got that problem. But also, I'm just not so sure it's one of the best Mario experiences. Like, there's just little things about it that, like, start to annoy me. Like, the difficulty level is pretty inconsistent. Like, there are some, and I guess maybe that's true of some of all Marios, but like all of these like world and stage based Marios, I guess, not so much the big 3D marquee titles, I guess, but like Odyssey and Sunshine. But like, I just find that like some stages are just like, this seems quite difficult compared to the last one. And some of that is like down to the perspective, like, the 3D-ness is sometimes a problem in this game. It can sometimes feel hard to land, to know where I'm going to land, even though it has all the normal things, like, you know, the little spot shadow underneath Mario and stuff like that. I feel like I'm getting that wrong more than I should. His moveset isn't 100% identical to what it's been in the other three games, and that throws me every now and then. Like, he doesn't have his running triple jump, or at least I've not been able to pull it off, but he's got like a butt stomp jump, which is slightly higher. So if you butt stomp and then jump immediately after, he'll jump a bit higher. But there's also like a butt stomp roll that I keep forgetting exists. So if you butt stomp and push the run button, he'll go into a forwards roll, and that occasionally I just like get the timing of that wrong, and it just throws me off a platform into the abyss. Because of, like, I'm holding the run button because I want to try and run for this next jump I want to do. So that's been screwing me.
Of course.
So that's been screwing me up a fair bit. Some of the objectives in levels, there's been a couple levels where I've not been certain about how to do the optionals, I guess. A lot of the other Mario, like world and stage Mario games, it's like it's got these, there's three collectibles in the level that you kind of need to worry about. There's four technically, but they used to be the giant gold coins, right, in like Super Mario U, and I think in 3D Land I think they are still the big coins, but in 3D World they're green stars. Yeah, they follow the exact same thing. They're just sort of in a level in an awkward place. You've got to go out of your way to get them or do something to get them. And most of them are fine, but there's the odd one where it's just like, I don't know how you're supposed to get this one unless I come into the level with a power up I acquired from a different level.
Well, that is kind of a thing that they've done before in Mario.
Yeah. You're right. It's not new per se, but it is kind of irritating sometimes where you're looking like, well, did I miss the power up somewhere in the level to get this? It's like, okay, now I've got to go get one, come back into from some other level, come back into this level, make sure I don't get hit so I lose that power up on the way to this thing, and then get the thing. like, because a lot like hinges on the cat power up, let's be honest, like, yeah, it's this game's whole thing, but like there are definitely a few where it's just like, okay, I needed to bring a cat into this level.
A cat was required,
and I haven't found a cat on this level, so yeah, I'm gonna have to go out of my way to come back and do this.
Where you need to find whichever one of the levels has the easiest cat that you can run through in like 2 minutes and just get it.
Probably like the first level. Well, probably, yeah. Yeah. But then you've got to go to the first level. It actually means traversing the world map finding, like, or going to the menu, clicking there, getting there, and then walking to it, blah, 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 blah. Because it's not just pick from a menu to replay this level. And the map is a little bit wondery, I guess. It's like, you'll know what I mean by that. There's like, although there is a path on the map where which connects the levels together, you actually just like freely walk around the map to an extent, and you've got to complete the stages to make this path draw and open up the next stages. But you can wander around the map, so that stuff takes time. You can't just like click 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 through the path to go and do that. Yeah, I think the bit that like frustrated me the most is that there were some levels where it's like, it's, there are some levels where it tries to do the, like, be more of a 2D level, but of course it's not, because it never just locks you into the 2D plane. So there are some things where it's like, oh, I could actually just get by that thing if I moved like 1 foot into the background, and then I could just walk past that guy. But it's not immediately apparent that that's what's happening, or the camera angle is flat enough that you can't really see your depth particularly well on those bits. And sometimes that's important. And it's little things on what is a good game, but like, they, like, I can't help but notice them, because it's just, it's a Mario game, but it doesn't feel like Mario at its best.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like B tier Mario, or maybe A tier rather than S tier, yeah, Mario.
it's a perfectly fine experience, but it's like, it's just, it, yeah, it's not, it, yeah, just doesn't feel 100%. I do quite like the Captain Toad sections. I haven't been too many of those, but like, I guess that's why they made a whole game about Captain Toad after doing it in this. Like, those are okay. They're more puzzly, and you've got to try and sometimes think about your route. But they haven't been super difficult either. But I can see why the idea has legs, or had legs. Yeah, it's okay. It's just not, as I say, I put it next to Dave the Diver and there's no draw there. So I haven't actually played it all that much.
Yeah, fair. I think that's fair. Well, of course it is.
Yeah. What else have I been doing? I picked up some more stuff for my PlayStation. I mean, my PlayStation 1.
Your PlayStation 1. Your PSX.
Yeah. So,
Why is it called PSX?
I think that was its like development name. Right, and then Sony did eventually make something called the PSX, right?
You're right, that's something else.
Someone made a PSX that was like a special edition, kind of more media center looking thing, rather than a console looking thing.
Yeah, like that weird Panasonic GameCube with the DVD player.
The Q. Yeah, but that didn't look like anything at all, really. Was hi-fi like design like the was hi-fi I guess hi-fi design kind of was like what the Panasonic Q looked like.
Yeah, it was
at the time.
It was like sub Sony design for hi-fi.
Didn't you like, I always liked the like little, you had like a mini hi-fi, didn't you, Zach, at one point? Like
the little, with the little hi-fi separates. It was so cool.
That was neat.
So good.
I always liked that that unit. Yeah, so I've been playing. I've been experimenting a little bit, because I was like, I needed to start whittling down or figuring out the save game situation on my memory cards, because I've got quite a lot of memory cards on my PlayStation, but I'm pretty sure a lot of those save files might have been dupes. And it turns out, yeah, there's a few dupes on there. But of course, in order to find that out, like, the PlayStation 1 doesn't track anything like dates, like on save game files, or all you have to do in the save manager, all you can really hope is that the game may have tagged the file name with something interesting that tells it apart from others. Gran Turismo 2, I'm looking at you, because you don't. and those blocks are like those take up 4 memory card blocks, those saves. And yeah, there's the game has no naming at all, as far as I can tell. You never give your name, so there's no way of telling those save games apart from loading that up and having a look at the garage and seeing if I can remember what my Gran Turismo 2 garage was like back in the 90s, and who else's is on these cards to tell them apart. Turns out I'm not sure. There's one that seems to have an awful lot of stuff, and I do remember a couple of the cards from them, but were they cards you just win naturally, and so everyone gets them? It's like, oh, I don't know. So I can't tell which is my save game file. But I did fire it up, and like while it was fired up, like it was just like, let's just play a few races.
Yeah.
And it's like, it holds up way better than I was expecting.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously it looks crunchy because it's the PlayStation, but that driving model is pretty satisfying. Like, it's like, yeah, it's simplified from like what you'd expect from a modern driving engine, but it's still kind of fun to do.
Engaging. Like, yeah. Fun to drive.
And trying to maximize it is still kind of, interesting. Like, I mean, it has a lot of the problems that GT retained from that point onwards. Like, you know, car collisions are super basic and kind of bumper cars-y, which I believe the series still does to an extent. Which kind of makes sense for online play, actually, because it means you just don't French everyone or put them into pit turns all the time. You know, maybe that makes sense for online play. But as a solo experience, like, it is kind of weird just have all the cars kind of going into a turn, sometimes at full speed, just go off each other, because it's just like, well, that was the quickest way to take that turn, was to use that guy with very little consequences. But yeah, that holds up pretty well. Like, I kind of forgot it had a licensed soundtrack as well, including a remix of Fatboy Slim's "Fucking in Heaven," which I found hilarious. Like, they've obviously like cut out the word "fucking," but like, so it's just like every now and then just goes Fatboy Slim in heaven, in heaven, like
in heaven.
But it's like, oh, okay, I had no recollection that this was here, but it's cool. A lyricless version of the Stereophonics "Bartender and the Thief" is in there. It's a strange mix of music, but I just forgot it existed. So that was surprising.
Also,
cool. It's one of those like rare PlayStation games as well. It's like where you kind of need, it's like, oh yeah, this is stylish. Like, the jazz wasn't as bad as it was in, like, Gran Turismo 4.
In Gran Turismo, and 5, yeah, yeah.
Like, where it's just like, you know, no, the music's actually all right. The menu music is okay. It's acceptable. It's cool. They're like, that game had style. So I was mildly surprised by that. I found dupes of my Wipeout 3 save, so obviously I had to play some Wipeout 3 while I was there. I won't talk anymore about that. It's fine. But I've talked to it to death, but it's always a good time. I had to play some of that. What else did I fire up? I fired up Demolition Racer for a moment, which was, absolutely no problems if anyone doesn't remember this game. It was kind of like a B-tier Destruction Derby, but like its own, it was like super high speed version of it was how I would describe it.
You
drive incredibly quickly. The control is quite twitchy. Like, impacts are like kind of mental, like with cars flying all over the place. But it's actually really quite difficult when you start actually trying to like settle down and achieve something in it, because it's your car's damage. Like, it doesn't damage in the same way as Destruction Derby, where it's like, you know, you've got like the points around the car, right? Which was always DD's kind of problem, because it kind of disincentivized you from using your front bumper.
Yeah.
Here you just have like a damage stat, so the car always drives the same, no matter where you get hit and stuff like that. But actually managing that over the course of a race, managing to do enough points of damage to the other drivers, because it's like DD, you want to hit them, you want to spin them out, you want to kill them, to earn points, whilst also getting a position in the race which adds a multiplier to your score, and survive. Pretty difficult, as it turns out, going back to that game. Great soundtrack, though. Some Junkie XL, some Fear Factory, because every game had to have some Fear Factory music back then. Some Cirrus. That soundtrack, I think, influenced me quite a bit, actually, back at that time period. It's like, it's a good soundtrack on that game. It also unfortunately highlights that I think my PlayStation 1 is starting to have laser issues. Like, it loads games fine, but playing like Redbook audio seems to be a bit of a problem for it. Like, playing CD tracks, I guess, is starting to become a bit difficult. It skips quite a lot. So that's making some games a little less enjoyable to play, including the one that I've sunk the most time into, which is the one I kind of intended to try and play, which was Colony Wars. Again, no shame if you haven't heard of this one. It's not exactly a mainstream title, but it's a space combat sim developed by Psygnosis in the exact same year that G-Police came out.
And
I wouldn't be surprised if those two games shared dev work, because they're quite similar.
it makes sense.
In their own ways. Like, okay, yes, this is a space combat game and not like flying a hover chopper around domes on the moon or wherever you are in that game. But the structure is quite similar. Like, you go into... it has like these video sequences that are very like, we want to do this thing and stop the Earth. You're against the Earth in this game, which is kind of interesting. The Earth has apparently gone off on the solar system is dying, like, because it's run out of resources. So the Earth Navy has basically just tried to conquer the galaxy, to strip everyone of their resources, so to keep Earth alive. And you, as playing as the League of Free Planets, are trying to stop them. So, which is kind of interesting, because you look like the bad guys. Your ships all look kind of evil and spiky, like you're the alien faction from Free Space.
Okay, and you're trying to fight the Earth forces. Okay,
who are flying things that look a little bit more traditional, look a little bit more like actual fighter craft. So it's kind of weird and backwards feeling in that way, but it does like quite a nice thing in that there isn't much in the way of like in mission just flying around or too much storytelling during the missions themselves. Like, you get that in the briefings before the missions, but then you go in and the mission is almost like hyper focused on, this is the combat encounter, do it. So like the missions can be quite bite-sized. Some of them like can be completed in like less than 2 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. And that's quite nice. That's quite like just cut to the good bits kind of design.
Right, yeah.
And I think that works in its favor here. Like, because the space combat's pretty good. Like, it's simple, but it's pretty good. Like, so most ships have both shields and the hull to deal with, but almost every ship you fly has specific lasers for that. So you can't just turn one weapon on and leave it and use that all the time. It's like, no, you want to switch to your anti-shield lasers, fire those off first. Then when they go past a certain point, you know, you've got to at least engage with the weapon shifting to be like, now shift to my main lasers.
And now so it's a bit of rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, a little
Ikaruga
bit.
Type stuff.
A little bit. Yeah, not exactly. There's almost always that exact sequence to go through. But the weapons do mix things up a little bit, because like, for me, the best approach for taking out larger ships is some ships have an EMP gun. So you can shoot an EMP gun at someone for enough, and then they just can't shoot back. So if you do that to, like, capital ships, that seems like a pretty good strategy. Like, massive, like, Navy frigates and Titans are flying around, and you just go up to them with your EMP gun and pepper them for a while, and then they disable. And it's like, well, now this massive thing can't shoot at me. Let's just bombard it with real shots.
And then you're done.
Yeah, and then you're done. So, I don't know. I kind of found that kind of interesting, a little bit strategic. But the thing about this game that is kind of the most interesting thing about it is that it has a hugely branching campaign. So, like, on the surface, like, the back of the box bullet point is, like, 70 missions or something to do. But on a campaign run through, you are likely to only see a fraction of that. It's worth checking out the Wikipedia for this and how it works. There is a structure to it. But like failure, there's a lot of missions you can fail, and it doesn't mean the end of the game. You just might take a different path through the story. And there are 6 different actual endings you can get. Some of them almost immediately. You could die if you fail the first act, and you'll get an ending, like, for instance. It's really interesting to see. You actually get a little... You get to see the sliver of the map of the route you took through your playthrough when you reach the end of the campaign, which I have done. I've done one campaign run through. Then it sort of shows you the path you took, but then leaves the little hints, the little suggestion lines on the map to be like, oh, you could have gone this way and there would have been something else from here, which would have meant different missions to play and presumably some, you know, different scenarios. It's like, so it's got some replay kicks to it as well. So I might go back and try. I think I got the second best ending, but it would be nice to try and see if I can find the route that takes me to the best ending, because I think I might just only have to redo the last act that I did.
Despite all the branching, I
definitely failed some stuff on the way, and I think it took me a slightly different path. But I still managed to make it to the nearly good ending, nearly best ending. It's a cool little game. It's got some annoyances, like designs from the time. Like, it's a 2-disc game, right? But for some reason, if you're at the point in the campaign where you need disc 2, you can't start your PlayStation with disc 2 in the drive because it goes, please insert disc 1. And you're like, ugh, right. So you put disc 1 in, and then you load your save file up, and then it says, please insert disc 2, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, for goodness sake.
It's like Tiger Woods on the GameCube, right? Like,
but you're not doing that physically, right? I guess you are, though. Are you swapping them out? The discs?
Yeah, you are. I'm doing it for real on real hardware, so it's...
right, okay.
You're just physically getting up and swapping the discs around in the console.
Annoying.
I mean, there's one thing that I'm doing that makes using the PlayStation slightly less annoying, in that I've got this little 8-bit DOE receiver that you plug into one of the controller ports, and that lets me use a PlayStation 4 controller wirelessly.
Mm. Oh, that's pretty handy. Sorry. Okay, because like trailing controller wires is very old school.
Trailing controller wires around with a small child that could potentially trip up or pull on it or do anything bad to it at any moment in time, like, yeah, not a great idea. So this actually opens me up a little bit to be able to muck around with this thing a bit more freely. Great little device. It pairs easily with a PS4 controller. I could use an Xbox controller with it as well if I wanted. There's a little button press combo you can do to swap between digital and analog mode, because, you know, PlayStation controllers had that analog button on them to change whether or not the sticks worked.
I remember that weird button.
Yeah.
What was the deal with that button?
Well, it's because
the little light.
It's because some games actually just, like, instead of having the option of how the controls worked, that, like, the control scheme for the game would change whether you had analog turned on or off.
Right.
Or not. So you could pick your preference, like, with one controller. So, yeah, you kind of need to be able to simulate that.
Yeah, fair.
So they do it with a button combo. So I've been mucking around with my PlayStation. I love the PS... I don't know what it is. It's like... I don't think the PS1 was my favorite console at the time, because I had an N64, right, back in the day.
Yeah, of course.
But for some reason, I go back to the PS1 more than I do the N64. Like... There is something super nostalgic and super appealing about the PS1. And I got 5 more games sat on my shelf right next to me that I've got, like, that I've never played before, so that I want to tackle, including the sequel to Colony Wars, Colony Wars Vengeance, that was supposedly a little more ambitious. So I'll get to that at some point. So you might be hearing a lot more about PlayStation 1 games.
PlayStation 1 games, yeah. What about Game Boy Color games, though?
Oh, no, I finished Shantae last time. I haven't gone back, I haven't gone back to GVC just yet.
Okay.
That's pretty much what I've been up to until I think of something else. I'm sure I've missed something, but as I always do. But that's what I've been mostly doing. Oh, I finished Leighton and the Curious Village. That's the other thing I did. on the DS.
Yeah.
There were still a couple of bullshit puzzles on the way. It's got to be said. There was one in particular where it's like, I don't actually know what you're asking me to do here. I don't understand the puzzle. So I looked it up. Like, it just wasn't clear about the rules of the puzzle. So I was providing answers to it, and it was like going, nah, that's not right. And I'm like, why is that not right? I don't understand what you're asking of me. So I burned all, like, got all the hints off it, and that didn't make it any clearer either, exactly what it was asking. So I did have to look that one up. And I'm like, when I saw the answer, I didn't have that moment of like, oh, I'm a dumbass. I'm like, nope, that's just a poorly defined puzzle. Like, screw you. I might have been able to solve that if I knew what you were asking me to do. The story in that game is so stupid, though. Like, really stupid. Like, impossibly dumb. It's like, I think I had that same problem with the other Layton game I played. Like, it's like when you get to the end and it starts just, like, unraveling the mysteries, like, almost rapid fire. Like, poof, you've solved that one. Poof, you've solved that one. Poof, you've solved that one. The solutions to them are always like, wait, what? You did. They could do that. Okay, I was never going to guess that, was I? It's like you've just made up some anime bullshit to describe how this could possibly work.
Time travel.
I mean, I haven't encountered time travel. There's definitely anachronisms game, right?
Coming up in the future games after that one.
Yeah, maybe like World of Steam is probably like full of it, right?
Well, there's one that's just explicitly time travel where it's like.
Not that I've played. Well, yeah, because, no, like, as far as I'm aware, like, from reading the Wikipedia, like, this was the first in the series. Then there's two more games that are in that initial trilogy. And then the next three games are technically prequels. So I've played Miracle Mask, so that's one of the prequel games. So unless they're worried about that being time travel and, like, people just getting confused, like, there's never been, like, any overt... Anyway, I guess I don't know if they really fixed that in Miracle Mask. My big problem with the some puzzles just necessarily been poorly designed. I guess you're just always going to run into that. Like, it's just the nature of the game. Can't define everything perfectly. Except you could. There's enough text space there.
Yeah, come on.
That one in particular, that was just poor. That'll do me.
Right. That's mostly what we've been playing. I haven't got any further in Tokyo Extreme Race over the Easter. I got to the stage 3 and got the car that I wanted and then stopped. But I need to get back to it. I never beat that Melancholic Angel. That's the one I need to get back to. The one where they added the aura to it with a patch because it was like poning people so badly.
Sure. But I suppose you've still got other stuff to do to work up to that.
Oh, yeah, loads. Anyway. Well, I've got a whole new stage now, so yeah. I've got loads of new races to do. But I think that is the last. I don't think it's... I think probably that might be the last and longest stage, is the third stage. That's the basically, I've got to the point that's beyond what was in the early access.
Right, yeah.
And it's in the main game, yeah. So I will update when I've made some progress there.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Gaming.
Games.
We got any videos of games?
Got some video games. Yeah, we're still playing that Skies of Arcadia Legends, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
In it.
Skies of Arcadia Legends.
Just a couple of grindy episodes.
Well, I guess, like, yeah, that kind of awkward mix of, like, it takes a while to get somewhere, but then we actually are getting somewhere, at least. It's like, we've had one episode that was always, like, entirely, like, just dungeon fights, right, and nothing else happened. But at least there's some plot going on in this. Like, I'm not selling it, am I?
Relaxing. We'll just call it, like, ASMR, relax. Go to sleep to us grinding in Skies of Arcadia Legends.
Random bullshit we managed to say about the grind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? There's almost a... that's almost a positive to games that have this like downtime, because it's just like, yeah, we gotta talk about some other stuff that's going on. Like,
yeah. Not that we don't do enough of that already on this here podcast, although we try.
outlets.
Yeah. But now we have come to a halt of the no news week. But we will be back in a couple of weeks with another one. So watch out for that and check out YouTube in the time being.
You better watch out.
You better watch out. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Ciao.